You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Story number one. I used to work as a night nurse at a small psychiatric hospital. It wasn't the most glamorous job, but I liked the quiet, the routine. That was before she came, before the girl, the one who sketched the door. Even now, sitting in the comfort of my house late at night, my fingers tremble at the memory. Goosebumps ripple across my skin just writing this. It started 3 months before she was transferred. A teenage girl, barely 16, admitted as a long-term patient for severe obsessive-compulsive tendencies and symptoms of psychosis. She didn't speak much. When she did, her voice was flat, distant. She spent most of her time in silence, except for the drawing. Every single day, with terrifying focus, she filled notebook after notebook with sketches of the same thing, a door, heavy, black, and scratched like it had been clawed at or gouged. I didn't think much of it at first. I tried talking to her about the drawings. It was normal in my job to dig into these things. When I asked her what it meant, she just stared past me with those unnervingly empty eyes. And then silence. I had almost convinced myself that she wasn't interested in talking, but just as I was about to leave, I heard her. That's where they come in. My mind went into spirals. I had no idea who or what she was talking about, but something about the way she said it, so detached, almost reverent, makes my throat tighten even now. As the weeks went on, her sketches started to change. The doors started growing more intricate, with symbols carved into their frames. Symbols I'd never seen before. The frame of the door became almost too detailed, grotesque in the way the grooves looked like they were dripping or twitching. One night during my rounds, I swear the ink on one drawing glistened wet, like it had bled through the paper. But that's not the worst part. The more time I spent in her room, the more I felt off. There were whispers, faint, scratchy murmurs I couldn't understand. They slithered in the back of my mind, always louder as I got closer to sleep. I brushed it off. Sleep deprivation, stress, the hum of a poorly maintained building. And then, I don't even know how to describe without feeling sick to my stomach. Every night I'd find myself in a long, dark hallway with no windows or doors, except one. The door from her sketches just ahead, always the same distance away, no matter how fast I ran toward it. The worst part wasn't the door, though. It was the feeling. Something was behind me. Something huge, breathing down my neck, but staying just out of sight. I'd wake up gasping, drenched in sweat, heart pounding so hard I thought it would explode. After she was transferred out, I noticed strange black smudges along the walls of her old room. They were foul-smelling, like something burning, but nothing had been burned. Worst of all, the stains wouldn't scrub off. Not with bleach, not even with the heavy-duty solvents we used in the hospital. My mind was already in a mess when I heard that random people from the hospital had started disappearing. There was a nurse I worked with for years. One day I found out that she was gone. Just gone. No resignations, no forwarding address, nothing. Her locker had been emptied out and records were conveniently missing. I can't even remember her name anymore. But what happened in those few days leading up to that girl's transfer really broke me. One night I stayed late to catch up on paperwork. Alone in the break room, I noticed one of her sketches on the table. Nobody was supposed to have kept them. They were supposed to have gone with her. I was staring at it, my hands starting to shake for reasons I couldn't explain, when I started crying, sobbing uncontrollably, like some unseen grief was tearing me apart. I wanted to stop. It was humiliating, but the tears just kept coming. I left, unable to face that door staring back at me, its grotesque symbols burning into my eyes. That's when the flickering started. Lights would buzz and die when I entered certain rooms. Monitors crackled with static. In the quietest stretches of night, I swear I heard creaking hinges and muffled breathing echoing through the halls. One day, I was passing through the hall when I saw from the corner black shadows, silhouettes standing in front of the room where the girl had been. I thought there would be some patients or visitors lost, but then I saw their eyes eerily glowing. I believed that fatigue had taken over, but one of the silhouettes looked in my direction. I swear to God, my skin crawled, and I had never felt that scared. It started running towards me, and in the blink of an eye, everything vanished. Everything back to normal, except the feeling of someone watching me lingered. A few days later, one of the security guards quit on the spot after reviewing footage of her wing. Upon asking, he didn't say anything, but the terror in his eyes was visible. It was as if someone had taken his ability to talk or comprehend anything. After she left, I thought it would stop. God, I wanted to believe it would stop, but it didn't. A week later, I started seeing the door again, not in drawings or dreams, but in my house, in mirrors, in the reflections of darkened windows, in the shadows of closets left ajar. I'd glance at my computer screen, and for a split second, I'd see its grotesque frame etched across the corner before it vanished. One day after my shift, when I was changing, I found the key. It appeared in my locker one night, out of nowhere. Rusted, heavy, smelling faintly of iron, its grooves were carved with symbols just like the ones on that same door. When I touched it, my body went cold, and I felt something, a creepy sensation. The vibrations were so faint, like a pulse beneath my fingertips. I threw it into the trash, but it was back in my pocket the next day. The last straw was last night. I woke up standing in my living room, barefoot, heart pounding. I don't remember getting out of bed, but there it was, the door, standing right where my wall should have been. Its jagged edges churned like smoke, and the smell like burning flesh and rotting wood. Something breathed behind it, loud, wet, eager. I don't know how long I stared at it, paralyzed, before I bolted out of the house. I didn't take anything. I didn't even look back. I booked a motel hours away and haven't been home since. I swear I'm not insane. Story number two. After taking a job as an overnight staff member at a psych ward about 6 months ago, I'm no longer sure what to believe anymore. Actually, I'm sure of one thing. I'm terrified. I'd seen a lot of weird behavior working in the ward. It comes with the territory. But my first unsettling moment happened a month into the job during a quiet night shift. I remember walking down one of the main halls to check on the patients, and there was this distinct sound of footsteps behind me. Slow, measured, deliberate. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up instantly. I spun around, calling out to whoever might be there, but the hallway was empty. That in itself could have been nothing, right? Old buildings make noise. The floor creaks. The mind plays tricks in dim light. At least that's what I told myself as I continued doing my rounds. But those footsteps kept coming back. At first, once or twice a week, then every single night, always behind me, always at the same hollow, echoing pace. Sometimes I'd whip around fast enough to see flickers of movement, shadows darting out of view, like they bent away from me. Things escalated, exponentially. Every night I'd notice something new. Little things at first, like the temperature dropping in certain rooms. I'd feel a chill tap on the back of my neck, as if somebody had leaned in close to whisper. But there was no sound. No one there. Just the cold breath of something invisible. It made me feel watched. Then the noises started coming from one specific room. Room 209. That's the room where a woman died a couple of weeks before I started working there. A suicide watch patient who supposedly passed from cardiac arrest with no warning. People said she'd been muttering strange things days before her death. I didn't know any of that until much later. But I swear to you, that room is wrong. Every night I hear soft knocks or faint muffled laughter coming from it. crying sometimes. It's always empty, always locked. And when I check the cameras, there's nothing there, except static. On rare occasions, I'll see a shadow streak across the screen, as if someone's bolting past, but it's never clear. And the worst part? The distorted footage always seems to move toward the patient rooms, towards something. It's around room 209 that the handprints began to appear. Frosty outlines, smudged like someone was pressing their hands against the walls, the windows, the metal door frames. And they're not on the outside of the windows. No, they're on the inside, facing inward, as though something is desperate to claw its way further in. Cleaning them feels pointless. They just keep coming back. I started noticing other things too, like the smell. A faint but pervasive stench that no cleaning product could scrub away. It smells like rotting funeral flowers. Sometimes it drifts out of nowhere, moving as if it's following me. The scent is...
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Strongest near room 209, of course. Lately, I've caught glimpses of something in the mirrors around the ward. I'll go to wash my hands, look up, and freeze. There's this faint figure, blurry and gray and warped, standing just behind me. It's wearing a suit like a man going to a funeral. It won't move until I blink or look away, and when I turn around, of course, it's gone. But the reflection is always so close, like it's leaning over my shoulder, watching me. The other night, I thought I'd lost my mind entirely. I was at the far end of the ward, and through the dim, flickering light, I swear I saw a staircase leading downward. There isn't a staircase there. There's no basement in this place. But there it was, dark, decrepit, stretching where no hallway should lead. And there, descending slowly, was the same man in the suit. He didn't look up, didn't say a word. He just disappeared down those impossible steps before I could even convince myself to move. When I finally got the courage to walk toward the spot where the stairs had been, there was nothing but solid floor. Every clock on the floor has started stopping at the same time, 3:12 a.m. It's the time that the woman, the one in room 209, was found unresponsive. No matter how many batteries are replaced, no matter how many repairs are made, the clocks stop. Every single night. At 3:12, the echoes of dragging noises fill the halls, a low metallic scraping, like something impossibly heavy being pulled down the hallway. It's a sound that makes me stop breathing, like I'm physically incapable of taking a step forward to investigate. And yet, despite all this madness, there are no records of the suited man, no visitors ever logged, no doors opened, no footage shows anyone entering or exiting during those hours. A patient pointed at me last week. She was sobbing hysterically and said that I was the man, the suited man. That night, while washing my hands, I glanced at my reflection, and for the briefest moment, I swear to God, I saw that my face wasn't mine. Story number 3. I've worked in a psych ward for years. You get used to the chaos. It becomes a part of the job. This happened a few years ago, during one of my overnight shifts. We were fully staffed that night, 3 nurses and myself, and the patients were relatively calm. It was around midnight when I noticed how quiet it had become. If you've ever worked in a psych ward, you know there's a never really true silence. You'll always hear muttering, sobbing, pacing, or even the distant buzz of the busted ceiling fan, which never stopped clicking. But that night, everything just stilled. At first, I didn't think much of it. Quiet shifts are a blessing. But as the minutes stretched into an hour, the silence became unbearable. There was this weight pressing against my chest like I couldn't fully breathe. It wasn't just quiet, it was oppressive. Even the shadows didn't feel right anymore. I know how weird that sounds, but the dark corners of the ward seemed wrong. Shadows that should have been static pulsed ever so subtly, like they were breathing, and worse, they felt aware. I caught myself checking over my shoulder more and more because I couldn't shake the feeling of being watched. Then came the first scream. A patient in room 306, a middle-aged schizophrenic prone to murmuring nonsense, began wailing at the top of his lungs. I ran to his room, but he wasn't making any sense. He was sleeping, peacefully. For a moment, I thought that maybe my ears were ringing. But then, when I turned back to leave, he suddenly grabbed me by the arm, hard enough to leave marks. His face was the picture of utter terror as he whispered something that didn't make any sense but sent chills down my spine. When I stepped out of his room, I froze because faintly, so faintly it was barely perceptible, I did hear footsteps in the hallway. I immediately thought another patient had gotten loose, so I stepped into the hall. The sound was uneven, almost like someone dragging their feet or limping. But when I turned each corner, there was no one there. At 2:47 a.m. exactly, the security monitors all glitched. Every screen flickered to static for a second before cutting back to live feed footage. That's when I saw it. Just a flicker, no longer than a breath. But I swear I saw something. A figure standing in the corner of the empty hallway, on camera. Not a patient or staff member. Its shape was all wrong. Uncomfortably tall, limbs thin and disproportionate. And within the next second, it was gone, and the feed went completely blank. The silence was becoming unbearable, strange and creepy. I decided to turn on the radio, just to lighten the eerie vibes. But when I turned it on, the only thing it picked up wasn't music or talk radio. It was this faint, distorted whispering. It wasn't in any language I recognized, just a low, guttural murmuring punctuated by sharp gasps and moans. I spent the next hour scrambling between patients. One man was furiously scratching drawings into his bedsheets. Jagged, chaotic images of open doorways, each one darker than the last, with long, unnatural figures peeking through. Then a chair screeched down the hallway. I mean screeched. It wasn't subtle or soft. It cut through the silence like it was meant to draw us in. When I moved to investigate, I saw a wheelchair positioned strangely in the middle of the hallway, its wheels wet. I touched the puddle under it, expecting water, but the liquid was thick and smelled wrong. Metallic, almost. When I turned back, another noise echoed. Doors creaking down the hall, one after the other, opening slightly wider with each breath, like something invisible was progressing. Every single hair on my body stood on end. And then there was the heartbeat, slow, heavy, inside the walls. I know I heard it. Even when I held my breath, I swore I could feel the vibrations of it pressing against my chest. But the thing that broke me, absolutely broke me, happened just before morning. My coworker was in the far wing doing her rounds. We all stayed close after that night, so when she didn't come back after 10 minutes, I went to find her. Her entire uniform was lying neatly folded in one of the patient rooms. Empty. Not a tear or drop of blood. Just her clothes, as if she'd dissolved into air. Her name tag was still pinned to it. I combed the whole ward, but she was gone. Completely and utterly gone. And then I saw someone far in the hallway standing. I thought it would be my coworker, so I walked towards it. The more I walked, the more it felt as if the hallway had been extending itself. I had been walking for 15 minutes. That's what it felt like, but still couldn't reach the shadow. That's when I saw two faint red lights, which seemed to be eyes in the shadow looking towards me. I froze. Blank, panic surging through me, fear creeping its way inside me. It was as if something had baited me, and now I was there, already in their trap. The shadow started walking towards me, but now I couldn't move. I was paralyzed. The speed of that shadow increased, and I closed my eyes, waiting for what was going to happen. And that's when I heard my coworker's voice. I turned around and found her looking at me, confused. She told me that I had been missing for hours. But how could it be possible? I saw her uniform neatly folded in that room. Before going back, I checked the room once again, but there was no uniform. The room was completely blank and empty. The thing is, just before the sun came up, everything returned to normal, as if whatever had crept into the ward receded with the dawn. None of us talked about it again, not in detail. To this day, I still don't know what really happened. I'm not even sure I believe in ghosts or demons or any of that, but something was there that night, and it was watching. I've worked plenty of night shifts since then, but that one, I'll never forget it, and I pray to God I never experience anything like it again. Story number four, I work night shifts at a hospital, a big old one. Most nights it's quiet, save for occasional emergencies or patients demanding pudding cups at 3 a.m. But there's this one thing that's been stuck in my head like a splinter, and every time I think I'm done with it, it pulls me back in. It's about Ward C. Ward C is the hospital's no-go zone. It's an abandoned wing, sealed off decades ago for structural issues. That's what I was always told. A harmless footnote of hospital trivia, until I found the key. I was doing inventory in the supply closet last month when my hand brushed an old skeleton key at the bottom of a drawer. Keys don't mean anything, right? But this one was different. It was heavier, colder, like it had been plunged into ice. The tag on it was faded but legible enough. Ward C. Something about it crawled under my skin. I asked one of the older nurses about it, and she looked like she'd seen a ghost. She told me to forget about it and keep the keys where I had found them. She didn't explain why, and for some reason, that just made me need to know more. Curiosity is dangerous. It's been weeks, and I'm still paying for that damn skeleton key, and I don't think I can stop. The night I first unlocked Ward C, the entire hospital felt wrong. The air was heavier, like it was pushing down on me. Even before I reached the door, the lights ahead of me started flickering, one by one. The power in the entire hospital was absolutely fine. And yet when I stood in front of that rusted, peeling door labeled Ward C, the fluorescence buzzed, dimmed, and went completely out. Just for a second, though, it was enough to make me hesitate, enough to make me want to turn around. I didn't. I turned the key. The lock didn't stick or groan, despite how old it should have been. Instead, the door swung inward with an absolute silence that felt far too intentional, like the wing had been waiting for me to come inside. The smell hit me first, mildew, rotting drywall, something faintly metallic. The hallway stretched longer than I'd remembered on the old blueprints I'd seen, but more unsettling were the hospital beds. They were still there, pushed up along the walls. The sheets were gray and tattered, but their faintly pressed shapes confirmed it. People had been lying in them recently, but no one had been inside this ward for decades. That's what I had been told. I tried to rationalize it. Maybe maintenance staff had been in here storing junk. But as I walked further, my rationality melted. The fourth poles towered over the beds, their rusted needles still attached to bags filled with dried, flaking crimson liquid. There was a soft dripping sound as a syringe at the edge of one of the poles slowly leaked something thick and dark onto the tile. I still couldn't make up if it was blood or something else, but whatever it was grotesque enough to churn my stomach. That should have been my cue to leave, but instead, I kept going. Then I heard it, laughter, childlike, high and sharp, echoing from somewhere deeper down the hall. There are no children in this hospital. This fact flashed in my brain like a warning light, and I froze. My chest felt too tight, but I forced myself to take another step forward, then another. The laughter stopped suddenly, as though whatever had been laughing knew I was getting closer and decided to hide. That silence burned. All I could hear was the pounding of my own heart as I turned a corner and a shadow moved. I only caught it in my peripheral vision, a flicker of darkness darting across the wall beside me. My hand froze around the flashlight. I swung it into the hallway but saw nothing. My breathing grew louder and harsher, and then, from the corner of the corridor, movement. Slowly, unmistakably, someone shuffled into view. A figure in what looked like a tattered hospital gown stopped at the far end of the corridor, unmoving. I stared at their face, or should I say, the black absence where a face should have been. Whatever it was, its empty socket seemed to stare back, pinning me in place with a weight I could feel in my very bones. It didn't move any closer, but its very presence was suffocating. I turned and ran. When I finally reached the door, it wouldn't budge. I jiggled the handle and shoved my weight against it, but nothing worked. One by one, I could hear the other doors behind me, ones I hadn't even touched, slamming themselves closed, trapping me deeper in. Something cold brushed my shoulder and I spun instinctively, but there was no one there. When I finally got out, falling into the well-lit hospital near the active wards, I checked my phone. It had been over 3 hours. I swear I was only inside for 10 minutes. That night was the first time I dreamt of the beds. I'd be lying in one of Ward C's hospital beds, unable to move, my arms strapped to the cold metal rails. I could feel them, shapes moving around me just outside of my vision. Shadowy figures pacing the room, muttering in voices so distorted they barely qualified as human. I'd wake up drenched in sweat with bruises on my arms and legs, like I'd been held down for hours, and each time the key was back. No matter where I hide it, it reappears. Coat pocket, desk drawer, car glove box. Once I even left it in the trash chute, but without fail, it's at the foot of my bed by morning, freezing cold. Things are getting worse now. The walls of my apartment, not Ward C but my own damn home, have started bleeding. It's not fresh blood, but dry and cracked, seeping in streaks down the paint. Sometimes I hear the child's laughter inside the apartment, echoing faintly behind my bathroom mirror. And when I close my eyes, I still see them. Those patients in hospital gowns, standing impossibly still at the end of my hallway, with those hollow black sockets for eyes. But the scariest part? Everyone at work says I've changed. They whisper when I walk by, saying I've been acting off since that night. I don't know what followed me out of that wing, or what's still attached to me. But part of me is terrified it's only a matter of time before I don't leave it behind at all. And most nights when I'm standing alone, I can feel it. An invisible tugging. Something pulling me back toward Ward C. Story number 5. I work nights as a nurse, and after tonight, I always thought the bizarre stories that floated through the hospital were created out of stress or exhaustion. You know, sleep-deprived brains making monsters out of shadows. But what's happening in my ward, specifically in room 326, with bed B, is different. And now I think I might be part of it. I work in a quieter wing of a hospital, convalescent patients mostly. Room 326 has two beds. Bed A, currently occupied by a guy named John, is nearest to the door. Bed B, though, well, bed B is the problem. It started a couple of weeks ago. On certain nights, as I made my rounds, I'd hear this faint humming coming from the general direction of room 326. Initially, I assumed it was from some nearby equipment. Old devices hum sometimes, especially the older IV pumps or outdated portable monitors we sometimes have to use. But bed B doesn't have any attached devices or patients right now. It's empty. It's been empty since I started on this floor 2 months ago. At first I brushed it off, but the humming doesn't feel normal. It's not a constant drone. It comes and goes in these strange patterns, almost like it's trying to mimic speech. It's like warped, garbled, but purposeful. And the tone, it's not neutral. It feels desperate, like someone crying out, but unable to fully form the words. I convinced myself it was pipes or vibrations in the walls, though my gut knew better. When the humming starts, the room changes. Stepping into bed B's corner is like stepping into a cooler. At first, I thought it was a problem with the AC vents. Old hospitals have their quirks. But it is always, always localized to bed B. The rest of the room feels normal, even pleasantly warm. But that bed frame, sometimes there's frost on it. I touched the metal rails one night, big mistake, and came back with my fingers tingling, almost numb as if I had held them against ice. The smell in the room is faint but unmistakable, sickly sweet, almost like rot, but not quite. It's this thick, clinging scent that catches the back of your throat and makes your stomach twist. We keep the hospital cleaner. There's no way that smell is just neglected. I had no idea why, but the other staff avoided going near that bed or near room 326 in general. I used to laugh it off until it happened to me. Honestly, words don't do justice to the sensation. The oppressive feeling of something watching you, breathing down your neck, though you'd give anything not to turn around. I had to check John's vitals near bed B last week, and I swear to you, every hair on my body stood on end. It wasn't just the sense of being watched, but being assessed. Like I was being measured, weighed, decided upon. John, by the way, is another piece of the puzzle. He's recovering from surgery and still a bit groggy from pain meds. But twice in the last week, I've found him out of his bed. The first time, he was standing beside bed B, his arm outstretched as if reaching for it. His face was blank, completely absent, like he was sleepwalking. When I gently shook his shoulder, he blinked and stared at me, confused before mumbling something about hearing music in his dream. Last night it happened again. This time I found him crouched by bed B, almost like he was trying to crawl under it. Something about the way his hands moved, the slow, deliberate tracing of the bedposts, made my stomach churn. When I brought him back to his own bed, he muttered something undecipherable, but it also sounded like a warning to me, or for me. Before I could ask anything, he fell silent. One night I tried to record the sound of the hum on my phone. What I got instead was a faint whisper. Not words exactly, but layered sounds, like multiple voices just barely overlapping. It started as faint static but grew clearer as the night dragged on. When I played it back, I swear I could hear my name whispered, though I couldn't tell if it was asking for help or accusing me. I've tried recording the hum again since then, but each time has been stranger. Sometimes it's just static. Other times the playback is warped, and I swear the whispers are angrier, almost hostile. And every time I try to play it in front of someone else, it glitches, going static throughout the recording. One of the senior nurses says there's a story about bed B. She remembers some bad business years ago, back when she was fresh out of nursing school. A patient in that very bed supposedly disappeared in the middle of the night. Not discharged, not transferred, just gone. The paperwork was a mess, records vanishing into the black hole of hospital bureaucracy. Nobody talks about it officially, but she swears it left a shadow on the floor. The worst part, though, isn't even bed B anymore. It's the fact that the unease is spreading. Patients in adjacent rooms complain of nightmares. Some say they hear distant humming at night, soft enough to dismiss, but just persistent enough to seep in. One patient from room 324 stared me straight in the eyes two nights ago, looking past me as if someone else was standing behind me. The horror on his face was etched clearly. I stood there unless he fell asleep. I didn't respond. Couldn't. Tonight I had to walk past 326 at the end of my shift. It was silent, just as it always is during the day. But I couldn't shake the feeling that it was waiting. Watching. I've started to dread my rotations. Dreading that damn room. I don't know what's happening there, and honestly, I'm not sure I want to know. Story number 6. I'm Alicia, 28, a float nurse at St. Gabriel's. If you're local, you know where that old converted tuberculosis hospital, complete with gray plaster, endless corridors, and windows that rattle every damn time it storms. I work third shift, 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., and you can laugh about the whole haunted hospital cliche. But what's been happening on 4 South, especially since Mr. Forsyth died, has had me shocked. It started about 2 months ago. The night Mrs. Willoughby slipped and broke her wrist, she kept insisting she'd seen someone skinny and black, crawling in the bathtub, right before she fell. She said the shadowy thing had fingers longer than knives. I thought she was delirious. I even wrote in her chart that she might be hallucinating. She was old, malnourished, and meds could do that. But God help me, I've seen it since then too. One night I was refilling Mr. Forsyth's water jug, staring off into space, and there it was, something moving under the surface. The shadow was too long, too misshapen, like the water was stretching it out, razor-fingered. It was about to grip my hand, but the second I blinked, it slipped away, gone in an instant. Of course, I tried to tell myself it was a trick of the light, maybe the faucet making ripples. I kept working. Then about a week later, I started noticing the voices. It was always worse when I was alone. Around 3 a.m., emptying Foley bags or cleaning supplies in the sluice, I'd get this prickly sensation between my shoulder blades, and from under the drain, swear on my life, I'd hear a whisper. Faint, hungry, almost sly. Sometimes it was just scraps of something, but twice I swear it hissed my own name. No one else near, nothing around but piping and the hiss of steam. I even stuck my phone by the drain and tried recording, but all I got were staticky clicks. The mirror's been worse since Forsyth passed. The one in his old room, 410, will fog up with no one even in there. Patients complain the air feels excessively hot, as if someone had left the steamer on, but we can't do much. One night, I had the duty to clean the room. I still clearly remember my radio glitched, and then a robotic voice just simply stating that I had to clean room 410 because a new patient was being transferred immediately. It was creepy, not going to lie, but I did it. Duty calls. That's when handprints, like something oily, outlined in grime and soot. I saw them not just on the mirror, but everywhere in the bathroom. It had been days since Forsyth died, and the room had been locked and empty. And then suddenly, the bleach bottle, which I remember I had kept on the cabinet, was on the sink, and it fell on my hands, out of nowhere, burning a small part. I heard a faint laugh. The room was empty except for me. The laugh sounded calculated, as if someone had intentionally kept the bleach bottle there and was having fun seeing me in pain. Just when I was leaving, I saw two smeared handprints pressed together on the door, streaked with thin black trails. The next day when I asked, my coworker told me that she never gave me any duty. This is the part that makes my skin crawl so bad I can't think straight. Lately, after my shift, doesn't matter how much I scrub, I keep finding black crust under my nails, greasy and gritty as burned oil. Feels like it's in my pores sometimes, like little things crawling. The worst was last week, halfway through the night. It stung like I'd gotten fiberglass under the skin, burning and itching until I nearly clawed my own hands bloody. It looked like old motor oil, slick and reeking. Then one night, I noticed dark drops all along the ceiling, leading right out of Mr. Forsyth's old bathroom and down the east hall. At first, I thought we had a busted pipe, but the stains trailed down the walls, leaving greasy, warped, human-like figures, faceless and hunched in the flickering fluorescent light. The next night, maintenance couldn't find anything wrong, and even after a fresh paint job, they started to bleed through again within hours. I've felt the tub paralysis too. I was straightening up Forsyth's room, prepping for its next patient, when suddenly my arms and legs weighed a ton, like something invisible put its hands on my body and pinned me, just for a few seconds. And then I felt a sudden push behind me. I lost my balance and fell into the tub, but I couldn't get out. It was as if someone was trying to choke me and drown. Someone grabbed my ankle beneath the water. It was thick, choking dread. And when it finally faded, my skin was freezing, my shoulders and chest covered in goosebumps. The water itself, shift, room alone, turn the tap and it'll suddenly run black. Icy as a corpse, and stink like rot. Only on our floor. Only when I am alone. I tried to reason it all away. Faulty plumbing, old infrastructure, sleep deprivation, stress. We lost Mr. Forsyth to a late-night seizure. Nothing unusual. And yet, 2 days later, his room's still a hellhole. Tonight, just before handoff, I saw the faintest, freshest set of black fingerprints running up the glass in his bathroom, like someone was trying to crawl out from beneath the mirror, or go back in. I know how this sounds. I'm tired, but not crazy. Story number 7. I'd laugh anyone out of the room for bringing up haunted houses or curses. But after what I've experienced in the last month, I don't laugh anymore. I don't sleep, and I don't go near mirrors. I'm a nurse in a psychiatric facility. Pretty standard stuff most of the time. There's one patient, though, I'll just call him Patient 12, who's unlike anyone I've ever seen. He's been here for years, diagnosed with schizophrenia, mostly nonviolent, harmless, except for one thing. Every single night at exactly 12:12 a.m., he sits bolt upright in bed and starts counting backward from 200. It's unsettling, sure, but harmless, we figured. Until the new guy, Ben, decided it would be funny to interrupt him one night about 2 weeks ago. Ben stopped the count at 73, cracking some joke about how dumb the ritual was. The patient's reaction was immediate. He let out this gut-wrenching scream like nothing I've ever heard. It sounded like his soul was being ripped apart. The lights flickered, the cameras in his room cut out, and then, just like that, it went silent. I found Ben the next morning, or something that looked like Ben. A mannequin, or wax statue, I don't even know what to call it, was hanging upside down from the ceiling in the break room. It was shaped exactly like Ben, contorted unnaturally, its arms and legs bent at impossible angles. Its face was frozen in an open-mouthed scream, but its eyes, Ben's eyes, were missing. Completely gone, just two hollow pits where they should have been. After that, things have been escalating. More mannequins have been showing up, ones that look eerily similar to other staff members. Some are stuffed inside lockers, some positioned in chairs, and I swear I found one inside the medicine cabinet, wedged in like it had been crammed there on purpose. I have been jittery ever since, but the counting hasn't stopped. In fact, it's worse now. The first night back in 12's room after the Ben incident, I noticed the clock on the wall started ticking backward the moment he hit 12:12. At first, I thought the clock was malfunctioning, but it wasn't just the clock. My phone screen dimmed for 3 seconds, the fluorescent lights dipped, and then 12 began counting. That's when I noticed his eyes. Jesus Christ, I'll never forget his eyes. They'd turned completely black, like tar pools reflecting nothing but emptiness. Every so often, thick black tears would trickle down his cheeks as he recited the numbers in the slow, mechanical tone. Every word he spoke felt wrong, like he was resonating with something far beneath my reality. And then came the whispers. The whispers in room 12 are real. As 12 kept counting down, a deep, gravelly voice, not his own, replied from somewhere inside the walls. The voice wasn't angry or loud. It was...
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Amused, mocking. Sometimes it muttered numbers too, just ahead of or behind him. And once it paused just long enough for me to feel hot breath on the back of my neck. I couldn't bring myself to turn around. This one really messes me up. Since the interruption, my reflection seems off. At 12:12 exactly, if I look in a mirror, I vanish for just 1 second. I come back, but for a split second after, I swear my reflection isn't me. It's one of the contorted mannequins, staring back with lifeless, empty pits where its eyes should be, and it smiles before it snaps back to normal. Worse than that, I have started catching glimpses of them in different reflections. The break room window? I will see a mannequin standing behind me in there. The fridge door? Same thing. But when I turn around, there's nothing. At first, I thought it was paranoia or my mind playing tricks. But it's not. This feels too vivid. More strange things have been happening around the facility, especially as 12 gets closer to finishing his count. Normal objects, mugs, pens, chairs, have started twisting like they're made of soft wax. The fluorescent lights in the hallways shatter without making a sound. Even worse, some objects just freeze in place mid-fall, as if time itself is breaking around him. One of the weirdest things that happened to me was scratch marks appearing on the walls of the hallway, like clawed numbers etched impossibly into the plaster. One night after leaving 12's room, I found faint burning imprints on my arm, a number tattooed into my skin. It faded after an hour, but not before I screamed about how it felt like my skin was on fire. I am seeing things now, Sometimes it's fleeting, a dark shape in my peripheral vision, or grotesque faces leering at me from reflections. Other times it's worse, fractures in reality, like spiderweb cracks in glass, spreading across the ceiling and showing something else beyond. I don't look too hard. The things on the other side look back. Perhaps the most disturbing thing is how I can't stop hearing the count. It's like it's infectious. The worst thing is that I have caught myself mouthing the numbers in sync with 12, even when I try to stop. I've woken up whispering them in my sleep. I know what you're thinking. Why not quit? Get out of there. Believe me, I've thought about it. But something tells me it doesn't matter. I keep getting this horrible feeling that wherever I go, I'll still hear the numbers. I don't know what happens when he reaches zero. Nobody does, but he's at 14 now, and the air feels heavier every day he gets closer. Last night during his count, the lights flickered. From somewhere inside the walls, I swear I heard something screaming for help while giggling madly at the same time.